Welcome to the Infrastructure Show. I'm your host, Professor Joseph Schoffer of Northwestern University. The Infrastructure Show is designed to present to listeners the reality of America's infrastructure, its condition, why it is the way it is, and what can be done about it. We gratefully acknowledge contributions to sustain the Infrastructure Show from Dr. Robert Peskin, Dr. Raymond Ellis, and Andrea and Ron DeFeo. Some U.S. cities are re-envisioning their street networks to prioritize people over cars. Atlanta is a prime example where implementing the National Complete Streets program is making a difference in community livability and safety. The Atlanta Department of Transportation has used routine road maintenance projects as opportunities to make design changes that shift the balance between people and cars, implementing proven crash countermeasures to deliver safer mobility for pedestrians, bicyclists, transit users, and drivers. To learn about Atlanta's successes with Complete Streets, we're talking with Betty Smoot-Madison, who is Deputy Commissioner of Strategy and Planning for the Atlanta Department of Transportation, where she oversees multimodal safety initiatives and programs. Betty, I am really delighted to talk to you today.
Delighted to talk to you, Joe. Thanks for having me.
So tell us about one of your recent projects, about what the community is like, what the issues were, what the problems were that you were trying to address.
Yeah, I think, as you mentioned, we here in Atlanta are trying our best to be more and more innovative and, like a lot of other cities, evaluating ways that we can get projects on the ground faster. So that definitely includes looking at our annual maintenance programs, and funding to see how we can incorporate more safety interventions and redesigns into those projects. But we're also looking at tactical urbanism and how we can do quick build projects and not have to go through extensive, multi-year processes to get projects on the ground, but really how we can work with communities to maybe do more tactical short-term, but have lasting effects and quick build projects. So one of the team has been able to deliver on over the last year is more tactical style, like I mentioned, and considered a quick build. It's one that we did in a community called Adams Park, and it essentially was a tactical walk lane. And so, again, we have over the last few years, been looking at ways that we can really deploy projects much faster. So we developed our tactical urbanism guide and released that. And that was really driven towards empowering communities to be able to lead the types of change that they want to see on their streets, especially local neighborhood streets. But we were able to partner with a local community-based organization here, as well as the community, and utilized a small grant that we were awarded from Bloomberg Philanthropy to deliver a tactical walk lane that had an artistic element to it. And so we took a, local residential street here. It was super wide. I think it was around 45 feet wide. And had some informal parking that the residents were using on both sides of the streets, but essentially really wide lanes. The community came to us and expressed that there was a lot of speeding happening along the streets. This also was a street where there were no sidewalks, so a lot of the residents, and there's a elementary school nearby, so kids would walk in the street to get to, from home to school to the local neighborhood park to some of the local neighborhood businesses that are nearby. So we saw this as a great opportunity to, instead of wait for, to identify funding to, put in sidewalks, we were able to utilize some of that excess pavement that was already there and create a walk lane for the residents to use. And so that's just a great example of, how we can just get better and use a little more creativity to create space for all. A lot of our streets, like many other cities, have been designed and built over the years to accommodate cars and to move cars the fastest. But we are now just in a day where we really need to make sure that our streets are designed for everyone to access what they need safely and equitably. So whether you're walking, you know, taking transit, bicycling, you know, or driving, you know, or using some other mobility device such as scooters, you know, we want to make sure that everyone can do that safely and that no one mode is really a threat to another.
So I need to take you back to something you mentioned right at the beginning of your description, and that is tactical walk lane. I've never heard of that. What is it?
So it's essentially a, it's not hard infrastructure, right? It's utilizing your quick build type of materials. So it could be your flex post, or wheel stops, or some other, you know, barriers or barricades or delineators to define a specific space. And because there were no sidewalks on this street, we allocated about 7 feet of space. We took that space away from the travel lane and, you know, installed barricades to allow for a pedestrian-defined space. And so I guess you can call it a temporary sidewalk.
But do you envision in the next decade giving that back to cars?
You know, I think right now we're working with the community to see what the long-term project will be. The hope is that we don't return that back to cars. But again, I think these tactical projects or quick build projects are a great demonstration of how the street can be used and better utilized instead of for cars. And so I think, you know, the project has been on the ground for about a year, and we are now working with the community to see what the next iteration of this project looks like. But the hope is to not return that to, you know, car usage, but to really ensure that, you know, pedestrians and bicyclists and other users have defined spaces that they can use and not have to mitigate some of the dangerous behaviors of drivers.
So did you get pushback from the automobile interests?
There definitely was pushback. We worked, you know, this was a project that started from community interest. And so the community came to us and said, hey, you know, we're noticing some really dangerous behaviors on the street. What opportunities are there? And so we, you know, we evaluated the street, studied it, looked at what the speeds were, and saw that on this local residential street, it's all homes, and there were speeds upwards of 70 and 80 along this residential street. And so just using that data, taking it back to the community and pairing it with what they were seeing, and saying, hey, you know, there is opportunity here. The street is wide. Instead of, you know, waiting for the city to find funds to put in hard infrastructure for sidewalks, we could take this space, this excess space that's being given to cars right now, and make it a safe space for the kids that need to walk to school and need to walk to the nearby bus stop, and really have a defined space for them. And so there was pushback because before the tactical walk lane, you know, the community was using that space for parking. But we, you know, I think after a series of engagement with the community and talking through the safety concerns and the alternatives, and offering that, hey, we're not taking both sides of the street, so parking could still happen on one side. But then you still have this dedicated space for people to walk and bike. You know, I think we were able to come to some resolution with the community.
So where does it stand now? What's the community reaction now that this has been in place for a while?
It is a mix. We still have those that would prefer to, you know, utilize the space for parking. But there are those who really enjoy the space. We had people come to the meeting that say, hey, I walk or run every day. My kids walk, and we use it. So it's kind of mixed feelings, but we're committed to continuing to work with the community to say, hey, this is really important for, you've got an elementary school nearby. You've got commercial uses nearby. This is a great way to support all of the various needs and diverse needs of everyone that lives here. Hopefully we'll have a positive outcome and we'll be able to continue having this defined space for pedestrians.
Do you have any data after the implementation on crashes or speeds or other important roadway performance outcomes?
We do. We have been monitoring and looking at data since implementation last year, and we only saw a slight change or improvement in speeds along the corridor. But one of the additional safety elements that we have programmed is to install speed cushions all throughout the corridor. So I think with the addition of those speed cushions, we really will see a drastic change in some of the driver behaviors along the corridor. So that's one of the selling points that we've been working with the community on and saying, like, hey, you know, this is just one intervention, this tactical walk lane, but there are multiple interventions that could happen. And when those interventions work together, you really do start to see the behavior changes and the differences in the approved safety. So we have the speed cushions programmed for installation before the end of this year. And so we're hoping we get another year to kind of study how both interventions have worked together and hopefully have shown an improvement in safety.
It's interesting to me to hear that parking is such a major issue. And I'm just speculating. I don't know the community, but I'm speculating that residents don't have other off-street parking, garages or driveways.
Well, the interesting thing is they do. that was one of the, I hate to keep saying selling points, but that was one of the wins that we thought, there would be for the community, is that every property along the street has its own driveway. And so we didn't anticipate the huge pushback related to parking because they have this access to their own, their own parking on their property. But I think a lot of the conversation we've heard to date has been around, when there's events, when they're hosting things, or even deliveries, deliveries can't easily pull up right in front of the property now. So they have to kind of park in the street or park on the opposite side. So those are some of the concerns we're hearing from the community. And I think those are things that aren't, they happen pretty sporadically, right? We can't plan for the parties that are happening at people's houses and things like that, but we can plan for making our streets safer for everyone. And again, there's still an opportunity to, park on the other side of the street, and the deliveries, they're going to happen just like they happen on any other street. They'll find the best place for them to hop off their truck. And those are pretty quick, right? They're not there forever. They're usually on and off in less than a minute or so. So.
And you still have the traveled way, right? They can stop there.
Right.
And it sounds like, as you describe it, there's enough room for a truck to make a short stop, but the vehicular flow to continue.
Right. Exactly.
So do you think that people are responding to the change? It's different. It isn't like it used to be, or that it's really a major imposition on their lifestyles?
I think change is difficult sometimes. And this is a community that has a lot of older residents, and so the community around them, I think, is changing quite a bit. So there is those concerns. But I think we also have an opportunity to focus on, the facts. And the facts are, it's not as it is, as it was before this installation. It wasn't safe for kids to walk and utilize the street if you're outside of a vehicle. And so this installation made that safer for everyone to be able to use the street and get where they need to go.
So are you hearing from parents of those kids?
For the folks that live on the street, we've heard from them, and there are a couple that have either kids or grandkids that either live with them or visit. And again, it's been a mixed bag. It's been some who are supportive and say, hey, yeah, my kids use it every day. They ride their bikes. And then there's others that say, hey, I actually rather still have the space for parking. And so we just have to balance those different perspectives and opinions, but still make sure we're providing a great public street for everyone.
But it sounds like you've achieved a very different balance than you had when you started.
I would say so. Yes, I would say so. And it's slow. I think adaptation to change can be slow, and to be able to see the differences that these changes make can also be slow, right? It may not be instant. And so one of the things we communicate with the community is that, hey, you know, give this some time. You know, we may not instantly see the results that we are planning for, but, you know, over time, people would get used to this new change being here and changing their behaviors. And then also once we add this additional safety intervention in, that also will help curb some of the old behaviors that have been, you know, consistent on the street. So give it some time, and I think we'll really start to see the results that we want to see.
Did you get any pushback from the traffic engineering community, the more traditional engineers that focus on roadway performance?
You know, we worked through that because we had established a process through our tactical urbanism guide. We worked with the engineers, the traffic engineers, through that process and developing the necessary criteria and standards that we were going to use for these types of installations. So because we kind of worked through that early on, we were able to kind of get their buy-in and get their support and really have them become champions of these types of interventions as well. So it took a little bit. It took some time, you know, I'll say several years ago when we were working through the development of the guide. And, you know, there were some concerns expressed by our traffic engineers, but I think by including them in the process of developing that guide and working with them, you know, hand in hand on developing some of the design standards, we were able to really sort through all of that. So when it came time to the actual installation for this particular project, there really was no pushback from the traffic engineering world.
So you've mentioned several times tactical urbanism guide. You've developed your own design guide for communities in Atlanta?
Yes, we have. And we have about 12 different project types that are included in that tactical urbanism guide. And so, again, we created it really with the community in mind, because we know as a city there's a lot of smaller projects and the local neighborhood streets. A lot of times we really aren't able to focus on projects on those streets. We're oftentimes focused on some of our major, you know, collector and arterial streets and programming funding for those, because generally they are our most dangerous. But, and so we really wanted to create a process where neighborhoods, if they wanted to, that they could really lead, and be at the forefront of implementing change that they wanted to see on their neighborhood and local streets.
So the community groups can use that tactical urbanism guide to advocate their own ideas, it sounds like.
Yes, they can. And all of the design standards are in there. So, you know, as I mentioned, we have about 12 different project types that we've approved so far. And we have design guides and standards for all of those project types. So really, it's almost like a toolkit. They can go in understanding what type of safety concerns they have within their particular street and go and pick out a solution and focus on that solution. And so I think it's really been a great success.
I'm curious, you felt a need to do this because there was nothing else in the literature that really addressed the problems that you were facing?
Yeah, I think a lot of our standards today in Atlanta did not really, they were more focused on your hard infrastructure, and they were more focused on your traffic engineers and your designers and your developers and the city agencies who had the resources and capability to deliver these types of projects. But we really wanted to have a more simplified and quick build process. I think the quick build is the key element there, and low cost, because we know communities, you know, they don't have an extensive amount of resources to do major projects. So tactical urbanism really is focused on what are those sort of low cost solutions that can be implemented fairly quickly, a lot of times either within 30 days or 60 days, but still have the same impact, safety impacts as your hard infrastructure.
So is that online, that document?
It is, yes.
So I want to make sure we get a link to it so we can post it on our website, because I think a lot of people would be really interested in knowing in more detail what you've been doing.
Okay, absolutely.
So what's next for Atlanta Center City Traffic Management? More of the same?
Well, definitely not more of the same. I think we are focused on how to get better, how to deliver projects quicker. And so, you know, as I mentioned earlier, we're learning how to integrate, you know, design and safety improvements into our annual maintenance, but then also learning how to scope our projects better to make sure that we're integrating Vision Zero all throughout those projects. So definitely not, the same as before, but we're an early or I'll say young organization. The City of Atlanta Department of Transportation is fairly new. We're only about 3 years old. We were formed back in 2020. So there's a lot of things that we're still learning how to do, but definitely just trying to get better at delivering projects quicker.
Sounds like you're not only learning, but you're teaching. And that Tactical Urbanism Guide is likely to be one of the major teaching documents. I want to make sure that we share that with our people. Betty, it's been a delight to talk to you. I'm impressed with what you're doing. We're going to keep an eye on that in the future, and I wish you continued success and innovation.
Thank you. Appreciate the time.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to The Infrastructure Show. If you enjoyed the conversation as much as we did, please subscribe to our podcast and encourage your friends to join us too. The Infrastructure Show is recorded at the Studio Media Recording Company in Evanston, Illinois, under the direction of Scott Steinman, recording engineer with a commitment to great sound. Our producer is Marion Sowers, a journalist with a passion for infrastructure. And I am Professor Joseph Schoeffer. Few people are more curious about infrastructure than I.